Hi, it's Amy Siskin of The Weekly List and author of the book, The List, and welcome to episode 131 of The Weekly List Podcast, which is part of a new section, Returning to Normalcy, which will cover our trail back to normal, as well as important historical events. Welcome. So as we start this episode, I want to just recount what happened at an event that I did this past week with Representative Val Cummings of Florida. Representative Cummings, just for background, is a former chief of police, and she currently sits on two committees that have much purview over things like the insurrection, which we're going to talk about this week on January 6th. She sits on Homeland Security as well as the House Intelligence Committee. So this interview I did with her during the week, we were discussing domestic terrorism and specifically some of the aspects of January 6th, and notably for history, there was a threat of an additional insurrection coming on March 4th, the day of my event with her. And so Speaker Pelosi chose not to hold session that day for the House, which is in and of itself remarkable. Our Capitol is surrounded by National Guard as well as fencing still in the aftermath of January 6th. And again, the fear was because of the QAnon conspiracy theory that believed that March 4th, which at one point in time in our country's history was the inauguration day, they had a belief that on March 4th, Trump would be inaugurated. And there were threats of violence. So in speaking with Representative Demings, I asked her, I said, what was it like for you being in that room on January 6th when the Capitol was being stormed? And something she said to me stood out. She said, I thought we were going to die. And again, I just want to reiterate, this is no wilting flower, not that any member of our Congress is, but Val Demings was a chief of police. And she was concerned, along with the people that she was with, that they were going to be killed. So you have to think about the psyche now of members of Congress as they sit day in, day out with Democrats and Republicans, and some of the Republicans who we're going to talk about in this episode are potentially being investigated as being part of the insurrection, or certainly they are of the same mindset. You would think after all this time and after the second impeachment hearing and statements by leaders like McConnell on the Senate floor and Liz Cheney on the House floor, that there would be a repudiation of the big lie. But there hasn't been. CPAC happened last week. Everybody, including Trump, is still repeating the big lie that the election was stolen from him, that there was massive fraud, that he would have won if not for this massive fraud. Not only Trump and the speakers at CPAC, but this week, former Vice President Michael Pence, who, as we have discussed, came within seconds, not only of himself, but his entire family being slaughtered by the insurrectionists. And yet, in an op-ed this week, Mike Pence compliantly still stating that the election was stolen and there were problems with voting, which again is the big lie. I would have thought, as we came out, we're now 6 to 7 weeks since inauguration, that the Republican Party would rinse itself off of Trump and move forward and start to tell the truth to the American people after what happened and the fact that almost all of them could have been killed. But no, instead they've coalesced behind Trump or gone quiet. Incredibly disturbing. So one of the things I wanted to talk about is, what does this mean for our Congress? How can we, as a as a government function when there's this much mistrust between Democrats and Republicans, some Republicans. There's been a number of hearings. Senator Klobuchar held a hearing this week, and something that really stuck with us, the D.C. National Guard commander testified in a hearing that it took more than 3 hours after initially the Capitol Police asked for help, knowing that they were being overrun, their perimeter was overrun, they were in trouble, took 3 hours and 16 minutes for help to arrive. And the D.C. National Guard commander said he was ready that day, and his troops had to wait. He also said, and this is atypical, that he needed to get approval not only from the Secretary of the Army, but also the Defense Secretary in order for the troops to go in. That's two extra layers that are not typically in place that also were cogs in the wheel. And he also talked about the conversation that he had, and this is something that has been reported and we've covered, but Michael Flynn's brother was involved in the phone conversation about deploying the National Guard to help. So all these issues raise questions, was this an inside job? Remember, shortly after the election, Mike Esper, Trump's defense secretary, resigned. Trump put in a flunky, who Defense Secretary Chris Miller, who was a loyalist to him. Why was it that Miller put in these extra layers of to make things more cumbersome? The other thing we learned in reporting is that there were conversations between somebody at the White House and the Proud Boys, the far-right Proud Boys. We have also learned the Proud Boys and another far-right group called the Oath Keepers were part of a conspiracy, that this was well-planned, the insurrection. And now this connection is being made to the White House. We also learned this week that somebody in the State Department that was a Trump appointee was arrested and part of the insurrection. So you start to see things tie together. And you start to see how being a member of Congress could be completely frightening. And again, this is happening in the light of day. Some other things that have happened, and by the way, the Proud Boys and groups akin to the Oath Keepers and others in Canada have been declared domestic terrorists. That is a step we haven't taken yet in the United States, but Merrick Garland, who's moving closer to being confirmed to Attorney General this week, did lay out a case to be very firm on domestic terrorism. So hopefully we'll start to see when he finally gets confirmed some action. Not only did he plan to take a close look at what happened at the insurrection, and there's been now over 200 arrests, but as well, he said he would go up the line, up the chain of command to figure out, this is the Department of Justice and the FBI, who was in fault? Who was involved in this? And so we're just getting the facts week by week. One thing I have been saying is the only things I really want to hear about as relates to Trump, or as Biden called him, the former guy, are lawsuits, hearings, impeachment, those kind of things. And that's really happened. Without him having social media, the tone and his ability to project his voice have significantly changed. You really see how powerful he was in using the media and social media to spread his lies and disinformation. But we are now up to 13 cases against Trump, both civil and criminal. In the last week, Representative Bernie Thompson and the NAACP served Trump a lawsuit citing his incendiary rhetoric and false claims about the stolen election that led to the insurrection. Similarly, Representative Eric Swalwell filed a lawsuit against Trump Donald Jr., Giuliani, and Representative Mo Brooks. Also relating to this incendiary language and the inability of Congress to conduct its business and to keep Congress safe. In both of those lawsuits, Trump was served at Mar-a-Lago. So those are now two of the 13 that are outstanding. Zoe Lofgren, also a senior House member and like Eric Swalwell, part of the first impeachment team, quietly put out a report, a 2,000-page report of social media posts by Republican colleagues in the House ahead of the insurrection that encouraged violence and or propagated the big lie. So again, I just want to talk about and point back to what it must feel like sitting in this room with people that may have been responsible for the insurrection or at least cheering it on, sitting across from them as you're trying to conduct business in Congress. It was also reported this week by CNN that the FBI is examining communications between lawmakers and insurrectionists and whether they possibly gave tours in the days leading up to the insurrection that could have familiarized the rioters with where to go. It's hard to believe, as I say this, that these things are happening in our Congress. And just imagine trying to do business while this is happening. Congress is moving forward. Biden's bill for coronavirus relief passed. The wheels of progress are turning, but on a very partisan basis. And without this normal communication that you would have, even with disagreements between left and right, it's hard to put into words what it must, you know, what the feeling is of how dysfunctional our government is and how our country has kind of moved on from this without any reconciliation of the truth. Fox News has its old followers coming back home. They are moving away from traditional news and moving more towards commentary like Tucker Carlson and Laura Ingraham and Sean Hannity. And they continue to propagate lies or to propagate whataboutisms or change the subject or not cover. But there still has yet to be a recognition that Biden actually won for much part of our country. Here we are this far later. There's yet to be a recognition. Some members of the Senate committees, like Ron Johnson, continuing to spread false allegations that people were masquerading as Trump supporters on the day of the insurrection. And that it wasn't really them. It was really Antifa. Even though we hear again and again, and FBI Director Wray said again this week, to our knowledge, there is no involvement yet with Antifa. Still, this propagating, this stuff plays in a feedback loop back through Fox News and the conservative far-right ecosystem. These lies get repeated and repeated. So you have QAnon moving the goalpost to March 4th from January 6th, and then there'll be the next conspiracy of why Trump hasn't been reasserted yet. You have big swaths of our country, again, believing the big lie. And so it's important to point out what it feels like in the country and what it feels like in the world, that even though Biden is there, and an article this week from the Washington Post reported on how much of the world, much of our allies, still doesn't trust us. It's not that they don't like Biden. It's not that they don't feel comfortable with the Biden administration. It's that they're concerned about Trump coming back or Trumpism remaining. And here we are this far out, and there's no, how do I better put it, than justice or truth. This whole project has been about the truth. There's still no reconciliation to the truth. So I want to name where we are. Now, there's all sorts of allegations. I mentioned there were 13 different cases that are ongoing for Trump. There are major happenings in two in the past week. In the Georgia fraud investigation, a grand jury was convened. And that Georgia investigation, again, is related to Trump's call. Can you find me 11,000 and however many votes so I can win your state? Remarkable. But that case continues. Also this week, the Supreme Court ruled against Trump, and he was forced to turn over his tax returns to the Manhattan District Attorney. So that case continues. So we have the Fulton County criminal election investigation. And then we also have the tax returns in Manhattan DA. So other cases, and we've touched on some of these, but we still have two related to sexual assault and then defamation, the E. Jean Carroll defamation lawsuit and the Summer Zervos defamation lawsuit. Mary Trump's fraud litigation is still outstanding. There's the Panama hotel fraud and tax litigation, Trump corporate class action. We talked about that case, about RICO charges that he had overinflated the cost of fixes in his apartment buildings. DC civil suit over the misuse of 2017 inaugural funds. The case from Benny Thompson and the NAACP for the January 6th Capitol attack, Eric Swalwell's. The NAACP Legal Defense Fund for voting rights case. And then the DC Attorney General incitement investigation for the attacks on the U.S. Capitol. So all of those cases are outstanding against Trump as we move forward. Some of the things that have happened as we return to normal, and it's hard to overstate how different it feels without Trump gone, how you can breathe. You don't have to wake up every morning, check your phone and see what craziness is happening. You know, again, as we were working through the list, there would be times while I was cooking dinner, there would be 3 to 4 breaking stories about kleptocracy or something, you know, illegal or something horrible or racist. Or it was just unbelievable what we endured for 4 years. And now things seem quiet. We have a White House daily briefing every day. We have federal agencies, the ones that have been confirmed, holding weekly briefings. We have a coronavirus task force that educates the American people and speaks to us about what's happening. So the feel of the country is different. Biden communicates. He doesn't tweet. He talks to the American people. So much feels normal, and how quickly and how differently it feels. But then there's some major things that are worth talking about. For example, Biden converting a Southern Texas immigration center into an Ellis Island-style rapid processing hub, which, you know, so we've gone from family separation to Ellis Island style. I haven't listed them all, but we talked in the last 2 podcasts about all the executive orders that Biden has signed to overturn with ease what could be overturned. Competency is back. We have coronavirus vaccines going out, over 2 million a day now. Biden invoking the Defense Production Act to have Merck help Johnson & Johnson with the third vaccine that's been approved to help them with mass production of vaccines so we can beat the curve of other kinds of variants that are spreading. And still in the background, we are going to have these reports of things that were wrong in the Trump regime that are coming out now. The Inspector General report from the transportation about Elaine Chao, saying that the Inspector General had found that she misused her office to promote her family's business. That report came out in December. It was referred to the then Department of Justice, and they chose not to pursue it. So, in addition to Trump, I think we will continue to see members of his regime have these suits. We'll continue to see this unusual behavior, like Ron Johnson, who I talked about, and others, doing these really unusual things that, you know, really make no sense, and putting out these conspiracies and whatnot that seem as if, you know, we're all scratching our heads. Is this related to his visit to Moscow on July 4th, along with, remember that, 8 other Republican senators and one member of Congress? You know, unbelievable. So these really strange things, I think we're going to slowly start to tie them together. But the main story for now is, was this insurrection an insider job? As we find the funding, as we find the contact points between the Proud Boys and the White House, between members of Congress and the insurrectionists. And what does that mean for the functioning of our government, the People's House, where the military will continue, National Guard will continue to be deployed to protect our members of Congress, where we had to avoid a session? When do we return to normal? And will we return to normal permanently? Or, as the world fears, is this just a temporary stop of sanity before Josh Hawley, Tom Cotton, Ted Cruz, people that are authoritarian-like in nature and watched the experiment of what we endured and might be able to do it more successfully? So stay safe, stay informed, and we'll be talking to you soon.